Penguin Random House Audio presents Surviving Savannah by Patty Callahan. Read for you by Brittany Presley and Catherine Tabor, with a note read by the author. Note to listeners. This program includes a downloadable PDF that contains resources and facts from the book. There is a kind of story, God, that glides along under everything else that is happening. And this kind of story only jumps out into the light like a silver fish when it wants to see where it lives in relation to everything else. Indivisible, Fanny Howe. The Seal Wife by Signe Pike. One night I'll break free, and hair streaming behind, I'll race for the beach. The wind, brackish and thick, will soften the air and cling to my cheek. I won't be able to hear you over the sound of my feet pounding the wood, the roar of the water, the hot lure of sand. Around me, the sea brush will twist and sing, sheltering the boardwalk in a thousand arches, a tunnel of green that will carry me away, back to the sea. Office of the Advertiser. June 18th, 1838. Wilmington, North Carolina. Heart-rending catastrophe. Thus have we hurriedly sketched the most painful catastrophe that has ever occurred upon the American coast. Youth, age, and infancy have been sent off in a single night, and a common death in the same billow. 1. Everly. Present day. I was born in water. For all of my 32 years, my mom, Harriet Winthrop, had told the story over and over to anyone who'd listen. I could recite her words verbatim. I'd been told them since my memory began. A tale worth telling, she would say when I rolled my eyes as she launched into the story. There I was, my darling, only in the beginning of labor. I decided to take a long, warm bath before your daddy drove me to the hospital. Here, Mom would laugh and shake her head, pat her hair in place. The pain was so mild, I thought sure I had hours to go with you tucked warm inside me. No matter how many times my young face would cloud with doubt, Mom would continue in her sing-song voice. But I was so wrong, and you came swimming out while your father hollered for your sister, only 2 years old, to call 911, and then... She always paused here, and I held my breath, even though I knew what came next. And then, your father caught you. Everyone who knew our family had suffered through this story, which had been embellished over time. There was the other part of the tale, where Father had wanted to name me Selkie. But Mom would have none of that silliness. Her children were named after their ancestors. This story became part of my mythology, my born and bred Savannah family lore. The Winthrop family, we are very big on legends, lore, and stories. But it was my grandfather, Papa to me and my sister Alan, who told the best stories. He regaled us with fantastical tales of a land beneath the water. There lived mermaids and the kraken. There sailed the great pirates and the lowly fishermen who found talking fish that offered wishes. There reigned gods and goddesses who ruled the waters with a vengeance, smiting all humans who dared to believe they had more power than the sea itself. The tales of shipwrecks, of vessels that lay on the bottom of the sea, were the ones that inspired our young minds to dream of breathing underwater and finding treasure. At 6 and 8 years old, we loved stories as much as the hot fudge sundaes we were allowed to have on Saturday nights. In the evenings, Mom cleaned the kitchen after dinner, and then sat on the porch with a cut glass tumbler filled with the clear liquid we weren't allowed to drink. Meanwhile, we joined Papa in the mahogany-paneled library, each as blonde as the other, me with blue eyes and Alan with brown. We crossed our legs on the plush carpet and lifted our chins to gaze up at him as he settled in the large leather chair and narrated his stories. Behind him, A limestone fireplace big enough for us both to crawl into gaped wide. And on cold nights, such as the one blazing in my memory, a fire roared and consumed the dried logs from a back garden oak that had been felled by lightning years before. Above the fireplace hung an oil painting of a lustrous steamship with its sails spread wide and its wheels churning the water into whipped foam. The sky clear and bluer than the sea, as human figures on the deck regarded the vast sea. The steamship Pulaski, 1838, stated a small brass plate on the gilded frame. Shipwreck tales were Papa's favorite, in particular the shipwreck of the Pulaski. Papa chose that legend again as we sat in our matching red fleece pajamas. We'd taken a hot bath, scrubbed our skin to pink and brushed our teeth, all the prerequisites for a nighttime story. He began reciting the words we'd almost memorized.
You see, before she took all those lives, she was a beauty. Elegance, her specialty.
She looked like a beautiful woman dressed in white robes, Alan said, meaning the sails.
Yes,
Papa said.
Everything was right with the world on a breezy summer night off the coast of North Carolina. And then everything changed.
Everything, I said in a reverential whisper. This was always when our hearts sped up, when everything changed.
The wooden steamship Pulaski, with her double paddle wheels and twin masts, sat low in the water for her fourth voyage. She plowed through the restless waves of the Atlantic Ocean.
Papa held out his arms as if they were sails.
Her sleek bow pointed north.
He dropped his chin and sent his gaze toward the fireplace.
Her destination was Baltimore, where she'd been built. Her passengers slept soundly, or walked the deck with summer's expectations ahead of them. First Mate Hibbert was in the wheelhouse overlooking the serene scene, his pride solid beneath his starched blue uniform.
Papa settled back in his chair, lit his pipe slowly, knowing we were leaning into the story just as we were pressing into his legs.
It was late, 11 at night, and one woman remained on the promenade deck, strolling and then reclining on a settee. And from the wheelhouse, First Mate Hibbert smiled at the sight. The wind picked up, and clouds covered the sky like a diaphanous curtain, blurring the moon and obliterating the stars. Peace reigned, and for this he was grateful. Yet.
Below, I said. Unseen, Alan said. Papa laughed and bent his head toward us.
Yet below, unseen. In the belly of the fine steamboat, a boiler emptied and the second engineer poured cold water into its copper belly. Steam was needed to power this ship and sweep it across the ocean into Baltimore. And while the passengers, all flowers of the South, slept in their cabins in the middle of the night.
His voice lowered as we held our breath and then fell for it every time. The quiet, and then Papa standing and hollering,
boom!
We squealed and grabbed onto his legs. He laughed as he sat down, his weight molding the leather to his shape.
It blew up, I said. Caught on fire,
Alan almost hollered.
When the engineer poured water into the boiler, its hidden strength erupted with the violence of a lit cannonball. A fierce explosion fragmented the piece. A concussion to the night, a violence to the wooden steamboat. Hull planks popped, lamps were extinguished, children wailed and women screamed. Chamber pots rattled to spill their contents across the floor, and berths rolled to block the exits from cabins. First Mate Hibbert was thrown from the wheelhouse to the wooden deck. China shattered and fire flashed. Steam filled the galleys. The passengers awakened, all of them. And the fight for their lives began.
Then what? I asked every single time, because the answer changed every single time.
Then the story gets really good.
Papa's eyes twinkled, and he leaned down, smelling of tobacco and mints.
Because now, comes the story of how they survived.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?